Hello, welcome back. So, I'm going to be reading chapter 2 of Chanakya Niti. In this chapter, Chanakya talks about society and how various different members of the society must behave according to him. The mother, she's considered the supreme god. No gift is better than the gift of cereal and water. No date is better than Dwadashi, the 12th day of the lunar calendar. No mantra is greater than the Gayatri mantra, and no god is greater than mother. The wife of the king, the wife of the guru, the wife of the friend, the mother of wife, and one's own mother. These five ladies deserve the status of mother. Father, who is the guide? The one who produces you, the one who gets your upanyan, the sacred thread ceremony performed, and one who gives you education, and the one who gives you food, and the one who protects you from all sorts of dangers. These five persons deserve the status of your father. A wise father must educate his son in a variety of ways in making him learn good manners, develop good character, and receive good knowledge, etc. Because the noble sons bring glory to the family and win admiration of their brethren. Rear up your son affectionately till he's 5 years old. Then admonish him strictly for the next 10 years. When he turns 16, start treating him as your friend. What's the worthy son? A wise, well-educated, and worthy son alone is enough to bring glory to the family, like the lonely moon is enough to bedlight the night with charms. One well-blossomed and sweet-smelling flower is enough to turn the whole garden fragrant. Similarly, one worthy son is enough to bring glory to the whole family. No use producing many sons causing worry and sorrow. One worthy son is enough who may support the entire family. One worthy son is better than 100 incompetent and useless sons. The moon is also capable of destroying the darkness, which even thousands of stars fail to achieve. Now, what's the composition of an incompetent son? Just one dry tree catching fire can burn the whole orchard to ashes. Similarly, one incompetent bad son ruins the entire family. What value is a cow which neither conceives nor gives milk? The same way, what worth is that of a son who is neither educated or a scholar nor devoted to God? It is better for a foolish son to die early than survive long, because by dying he would give sorrow only once, but by surviving he would cause grief and sorrow every moment of his survival by his repeated foolish acts. A worthless son is better dead than alive. Now, about a wife. True wife is she who is pious and deft in her work, who is faithful to her husband, who loves her husband, and who is truthful to her husband. Chanakya lists five qualities for an ideal wife. She ought to be pious, deft, faithful, loving, and truthful to her husband. Well, according to me, in today's day and age, it should be vice versa. That wife who takes a resolve without seeking her husband's permission, for it verily shortens her husband's life. Such women are consigned to hell when they die. Woman, in comparison to a man, has double of appetite, 4 times more shyness, 6 times more courage, and 8 times more the sexual desire. A woman is by nature liar, courageous, deceitful, foolish, greedy, impious, and cruel. These are the innate attributes of a woman. Now, I see this in light of what was happening back in the days in the society in general, and the author of this book also mentions this, that a man is basically what he's surrounded by. So this is what society thought of women in those days, and don't shoot the messenger here. Wealth protects dharma. Yoga protects education or knowledge, sovereignty, and protects king, and a good woman protects home. Chanakya says that for maintaining dharma, some material resources are needed, which can be procured only by money. Yoga here means application. Obviously, knowledge decays when not applied. According to Chanakya, a rough, tough ruler is ill-suited for the job. It is only by suavity or apparent softness that he can win over people easily. The last observation is too true to need any clarification. A woman doesn't become pious by giving alms, performing rigid austerities and fasts, and visiting sacred places, as by having water she gets after washing her husband's feet. A foolish man who under infatuation believes that a particular beautiful woman has fallen for him verily dances to her tune as though he's her plaything. Women have a knack of talking to one man, casting an askew glance at other, and loving secretly a third man. They can't devotedly love just one man. A wise man shouldn't hesitate marrying an unbeautiful woman if she happens to be belonging to a reputed good family. But even if a girl be extremely beautiful, the wise man shouldn't marry her if she be from a lowly, ill-reputed, from a matrimonial alliance. I don't know. Doesn't make sense in today's day and age. I'm kind of hesitating to read that, but I'm at the last point, so I'll finish. Do not hesitate in getting nectar even from poison, if it be available, and gold even from the filth. Accept good knowledge even from a pariah, and a good girl even from a low family. Both these aphorisms state contradictory observations. While the above one says, don't marry a girl from a low family, even if be good and virtuous, the shloka below asserts marrying a virtuous girl, even if she's belonging to a low caste or low family. What I think it really means is low morality is a no-go in case of a marriage alliance, so you shouldn't really get into that aspect of any person or bring that kind of a person into your family. And I'll move on to the parents. Those parents who don't take interest in their son's education, or those who don't provide him with good education, are verily his enemies. An uneducated man amongst the educated ones looks as ugly as a crow among the swans. A father bequeathing the loan, a mother of loose morals, a wife extremely beautiful, and a foolish son, all should be deemed as enemies. Mutual relationships. The real son is he who is devoted to his father. The real father is he who looks after his son well and rears him up with care. The real friend is the one who is trusted, and the real wife is she who delights her husband's heart. The home. That home beats even the divine pleasures hollow which has a virtuous lady, a noble nature and promising son, with his own son, grandson, and enough riches. That home which is not smeared by the mud and dust brought in by scholarly Brahmana's feet, where no sound of chanting of the Veda mantras is heard, from where the reverberations made at the time of offering oblation to the sacred fire do not originate in verily as inauspicious and eerily as crematorium. The Brahmanas. The Vipra, the scholarly Brahmins, is the tree whose root is the Vedic hymn chanted in every evening and morning worship, the religious and ritual acts being the leaves. The root of the tree must be protected at every cost, as the whole tree derives strength from it. If the tree is lost, then neither the leaves would remain nor the branches. This boat, in the form of the Brahmanas going across the sea of existence, is typical as it moves in the reverse order. Those who remain below it go across easily, but those who try to ride over it fall down and get drowned. It is a symbolic representation of the assertion that those who remain below the Brahmans fare better in this mundane sea of existence and successfully cross it, but those who try to defy the authorities of the Brahmans meet their ruin. That Brahman who eats only once in a day, who devotes his time in studies and in practicing various austerities, and who copulates with his wife only during a ritukal, the period immediately after the menses, is called Dvij, or the twice born. The Brahman who eats roots, bulbs produced from the land untilled, whoever dwells in jungles and performs the Shraddha of the departed ancestors, every day is called the Rishi, the sage. The Brahman who ever remains busy in mundane work, who owns and tends to cattle, who tills the land and does farming, is known as the Vaishya, the merchant class Brahman. Chanakya is trying to assert that one's social category is not defined by birth, but by one's profession. The Brahman who sells lac and its products, oil, indigo, plant, flowers, honey, ghee, wine, meat, and its products is called a Shudra Brahman or a low-caste Brahman. A Brahman who steals the things belonging to the gurus and gods, copulates with others' wife, and is able to dwell among beings of any species is called the Pariah Brahman. The Brahman who recklessly destroys the temples, wells, ponds, orchards without any fear of social repercussions is verily a Mlecha, or an infidel Brahman. A Brahman who puts hurdles in ways of others, who is deceitful, scheming, cruel, bearing ill will for others, sweet by tongue but foul by heart, is called a tomcat Brahman. The Brahman who studies the Veda only for the sake of earning money, who accepts food from Shudra, is verily a snake sans poison. Such Brahmins cannot do anything noble. He who is enraged, drank up my sire, the sea, who wrathfully kicked my husband, who from the very childhood bare my enemy Saraswati upon his tongue, who plucks off my lotus to offer them worship of Lord Krishna, he or his brethren, the Brahmins have been bent upon ruining me. Hence, I would ever shun going into their houses. Lakshmi, the goddess of riches, alludes various mythological happenings to Agastya drank up the sea, her father. The sage Bhrigu kicked Vishnu, her husband, all the Brahmanas get their initiation in learning by chanting the name of Saraswati, the goddess of speech, and her arch enemy. On all the Brahmanas, for all the worship of Lord Shiva, pluck off lotus flowers which abound her home. Hence, she would never go to the houses of Brahmanas, that is, the Brahmanas are bound to stay poor in wealth because of this innate prejudice of the goddess Lakshmi. The Pandit. He who talks with a reference in the context, who knows how to influence people, express his love or anger according to his capacity, is called a Pandit. He who knows when and where to speak, how to influence people, and how to be wrathful or affectionate, in what measure, is really a wise man or a Pandit. A Pariah. He who eats without offering proper respect to an unexpected guest, coming from a far-off place and bone-tired, is called a pariah. After smearing oil on the body, after getting touched by the funeral pyre smoke, after copulation and after getting the hair nails, etc., cut the man remains pariah till he takes bath. The crow amongst the birds, the dog among the animals, the sinner among the sages, and the backbiter among all is a pariah. The Yavan. The learned scholars opine that the Yavan, originally a Greek, but commonly understood as any foreigner, is as mean as 1,000 pariahs. No one can be meaner than a Yavan. Herein, Chanakya expresses a deep-rooted prejudice prevalent among his times. Now about the Guru. The fire god is the Guru of the three social categories, viz. The Brahmanas, the Kshatriyas, the warrior class, the Vaishya, the trader class. The Brahman is a Guru of all the societal categories except his own. The guru of woman is her husband, and the guest is a guru of all the inmates of the house. The guru is also the most respectable person besides being the teacher or mentor or preceptor. Kuleen, the scion of noble descent. The Kuleens are scions of a noble family. Never ditch or dupe anybody till their last breath. Hence, the kings choose to keep them in their courts. Even when cut off, the sandalwood tree does not stop giving its sweet fragrance. Even when the old elephant doesn't let go of his sturdy play, even when crushed between the crushers, the sugarcane continues to be sweet. The same way Kuleen, even when fallen on evil days, doesn't discard his noble manner and cultured behavior. Like gold is tested by rubbing, cutting, heating, and beating, so also man is tested by his sacrifice, moral conduct, innate qualities, and his actions. Beauty of hand, the real beauty is now being talked about. Beauty of hands lies in giving alms and not in wearing bracelets. The beauty of the body becomes clean by bath and not by applying sandalwood paste. One feels satisfied by being honored and not by being fed. One attains to moksha by knowledge and not by self-decoration. The last one needs an explanation. Moksha is a stage represented by desirelessness, while the process of self-decoration is the outcome of the attempt to satiate the desires, which is intermeable, as the desires have a tendency to grow on what they are fed. obviously, the second stage cannot lead to moksha, which is the ultimate destination of the conscious soul. Now, the definition of the real friend. He who is together with you in festivities, distress, drought, and in crisis caused by an enemy attack, in the royal courts and in the crematorium, is your real friend. Away from home, in the foreign strand, one's knowledge is one's best friend. Inside home, one's wife is one's best friend. For a patient, the best friend is an efficacious medicine. While after one's death, dharma is one's best friend. It is believed that he who adhered to his dharma religiously and firmly gets a divine reward after death. Pleasures and happiness. If one has obedient son, a pious wife following Vedic path, and if one is satisfied with his material possessions, one is living verily in the heaven. Getting good food along with the power to digest it, getting beautiful woman along with the power to enjoy her, getting riches along with capability to dole alms, are the outcome of one's no less arduous penance and austerities. The nectar of satisfaction begetting peace and happiness cannot be available for people hankering for material riches and physical pleasures. Uncontrollable sexual cravings is the most deadly disease. Ignorance and infatuation are the most deadly foes. Wrath is the most deadly fire, and knowledge of self is the happiness supreme. He who has his mother like the goddess Lakshmi, father like Lord Vishnu, and brothers and other close relations like devotees of Lord Vishnu and Krishna, dwells in the house replete with all the pleasures of the three realms, the heaven, the earth, and the netherworld, Patal Lok. About grief, separation from the beloved, insult by the close relations, unpaid debt, service to the wicked kind, poverty, and association of the crooked persons incinerate the body even without fire. Residence in the village of wicked persons, service to lowly family, unnourishing food, foul speaking wife, foolish sons, widowed daughter, all these incinerate the body even without fire. Death of wife in old age, money and under brother's control, and dependence on others for daily bread caused a great anomaly, hence grief in one's life. Although the foolishness of the self and insurmountable youthful exuberance cause grief, yet the greatest grief is caused by one's forced stay at others' house. This fount of vitality, the Lord of all medicines, this moon with the body made of nectar and the shine enchanting crow's house splendorless, the moment it arrives in the halo of the sun, who doesn't lose stature by stepping in other's house? It is believed that all herbs and vegetation, the source of medicine, derive their efficaciousness, potency from the rays of the moon, which is said to be made of nectar. Despite its all natural splendor and gifts, even the moon loses its charm the moment the sun rises, that is, the moment it survives beyond darkness and tries to enter the house of the sun, that is the daytime, it loses its power. He whose mind is not steady doesn't get happiness, either amongst the people or in the loneliness of the jungle. When lonely, he longs for company. When he is in company, he yearns for loneliness. Those who are signed by the mundane fair get solace only under three conditions: staying with the son, with the wife, or in the company of noble person. It means that persons tired and dawdled by the mundane duties get solace in the company of his family or of the family of gentle persons. Such a company rejuvenates his exhausted physique and overworked mind. Knowledge or education. Despite having a well-endowed physique, beauty, charms, and belonging to a high and big family, if a man is uneducated or ignorant, he looks as useless and unimpressive as kinshuk palash flowers, having only color but no fragrance. Knowledge or education is like cow of plenty, giving good things even in the most adverse period. In the foreign strands, it protects like mother and renders help as though it is a veritable secret treasure. An uneducated person's life is as useless as the tail of a dog, neither capable of covering its privities nor warding off flies and mosquitoes. Chanakya says that without education or knowledge, life has no value. Neither it can take out wants, nor it can provide comfort to the unfortunate man. An educated man, on the other hand, a scholar, gets accolades from all and earns reputation in society. And since education helps one get everything one desires in life, it is adored everywhere. Neither a messenger could be sent to the sky, not any communication could be established, not anyone told us about anything existing there. Still, the scholars predict with great precision the solar and lunar eclipses. Who would hesitate in calling them the very erudite scholars? About students. If one craves for comfort, then he should drop the idea of studying. And if one wants to study sincerely, he should stop craving for comfort. One cannot get comfort and education simultaneously. A student desirous of getting education must shun the following 8 activities: sexual intercourse, gratification of the tongue, showing anger and greed, caring for personal beautification, moving about the fair and fate of entertainment, excessive sleeping, and indulging in anything excessively. In short, Chanakya says that for getting education, the student must perform a rigorous penance, complete with all the severe austerities. He who tries to get education in comfort fails to get it in reality, and vice versa. Like one digs the ground deep by the mattock to bring out water, so should a student attempt to get knowledge from one's guru. One has to toil very hard to get water from the depth of the earth. Chanakya says that in the same way, a student should toil and render strenuous service to his guru to get knowledge from him. I'll end this here so that we can continue the next time.